This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Domicile. The word itself sounds a little old-fashioned, but it has modern political edges here in the Granite State. A Senate bill known as SB 3 would sharpen the definition of what domicile means for voting purposes. People seeking to cast a ballot would have to prove their address was a primary home, a place to which they had the intention of returning after a departure. Supporters say it would clean up those cases where someone is only in New Hampshire for a short time but is still able to vote using same-day registration. The Secretary of State's office supports the measure. At a public hearing last week, however, opposition was strong based on an array of concerns. Defining domicile is the topic today in The Exchange. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Joining us for the hour is our colleague Casey McDermott, NHPR reporter, who's been covering bills this year. She joins us from Manchester. Casey, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure thing.
And also with us for a few minutes now is Senator Regina Birdsell. She's a Republican state senator from District 19, which includes Derry, Hampstead, and Windham. She's chair of the Senate Election Law Committee and is the lead sponsor of that bill I mentioned, SB 3, on domicile. And Senator Birdsell, really good to have you, too. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for asking me. Glad to be here.
Well, Casey, I'll just start with you, please. What's domicile and how is it different from what we usually think of with voter registration, which is residency?
So what you hear a lot in these discussions around domicile and residency, because they are kind of easy to confuse with one another in the context of these conversations, is that people can have more than one residence, but you can only have one domicile, particularly for voting purposes. So, you know, while someone might have, you know, a home in New Hampshire, a home in Florida, a home in another state, or maybe someone is, you know, in the example that we hear a lot of with regard to out-of-state college students, maybe you have someone who's coming to New Hampshire from Michigan and they live in Michigan, but they also live in New Hampshire, they can only claim one of those places as their domicile for voting purposes. So with regard to New Hampshire's law around this, as it's written right now, the law says that someone's domicile for voting purposes is that one place where, more than any other place, that person has established a physical presence and an intent to maintain kind of their presence there, with regard to kind of civic purposes more than anywhere else. So that's the place that they have decided that they are most invested in civically and where they want to cast a vote.
Interesting. So, Casey, it sounds like a residence is just a physical structure, an apartment, a house. A domicile is sort of where the heart is, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, it's a little bit harder to pin down. And I think that's part of what you hear whenever we have these discussions about how you determine someone's domicile, is that it can be in some ways fluid, because it could be a question of where someone considers their, you know, home more than any other, instead of necessarily where they, you know, physically spend the most time out of a year.
Well, and Casey, what are the most important features of this bill? And we'll go into detail throughout the hour, but just kind of give us the 1, 2, 3.
Sure. So one of the things that this bill does is that it adds kind of another layer to the definition of domicile for voting purposes, in that right now the definition says that it's a question of fact and intention, but this bill would add another layer to that where it says it's a question of fact and intention, quote, coupled with a verifiable act or acts carrying out that intent. So this is an effort to establish not only that someone is here, present, and considers New Hampshire their domicile for voting purposes on Election Day, but also that they have an intent to stay in New Hampshire beyond the election. And that's really a reflection of some of the concerns that you hear, I think particularly from Republicans, that people, you know, might be coming into the state, working on a campaign, for some months and then voting in our elections here and then leaving whenever those elections are over. Or there are a few college students, you know, who don't necessarily plan to stay in New Hampshire.
Looks like we're having a little bit of...
I'm just paraphrasing some of the concerns that we...
Casey, it looks like we're having a little bit of trouble with your line there. Sorry to interrupt you. It looks like we're having a little bit of trouble with your line there.
Sure.
So I'm going to go to Senator Birdsell for a minute, if I could, please. And Senator Birdsell, bills are often in response to events or problems that have occurred. What event or problem is this bill aimed at?
Well, I will say it's really not addressing, I don't think, a problem, but it's addressing concerns that I have found when I was running for state rep in Hampstead and Kingston in 2010 and 2012. I hit almost every house in Hampstead, and one of the biggest issues that I came across was the concerns about my constituents were concerned about the integrity of our voting, of our election. And I found the same issues when I was doing door-to-doors when I was running for the Senate. So there is a perception out there, right or wrong, there is a perception out there that there are issues with our election integrity. And I refer back to a poll that was done back in 2015 where 57% of our constituents, and this is for a 30-day residency law, it wasn't for my domicile bill, but 57% of Granite Staters supported a 30-day residency law, and of course 74% of Republicans supported it, 58% of Independents supported it, and 41% of Democrats supported it. So it was almost a 50-50 for Democrats. So it's addressing some of what my constituents and what obviously across the state, people have problems with the integrity, what they perceive as an integrity in our election system.
So it's in response to a feeling that you've gotten from voters as you've gone door to door during your various campaigns.
Absolutely.
How valid do you think those feelings are, Senator Birdsell? Because we've heard repeatedly from a lot of people, you know, local elections officials, the Secretary of State's office, the governor himself, saying there's no widespread evidence of voter fraud in New Hampshire. We might need to tighten up our system, but there's very little fraud.
Well, if you look at the testimony that the Secretary of State gave last Tuesday, he said there has been at least one case of voter fraud prosecuted every election. So in a state where you have lower tier like state reps and maybe county races that are won by 1-2 votes, we had a Senate race that was won by only 8 votes. So
if that's pretty close. Yeah,
that's pretty close. And if one vote is if one of our citizens votes are disenfranchised because of that one vote or that one person that was prosecuted, I think it's a problem.
Let's hear what Secretary of State Gardner said, since you mentioned it, Senator Birdsell, when he testified last week in support of your bill.
We're not denying anyone who shows up at the polls to be able to vote. We're just saying we want to be able to let everyone know that these votes are valid and true, and that helps the turnout, and that's been our tradition here, and that's why I'm supporting this legislation.
And so that's Secretary of State Bill Gardner, again, testifying last week in support of SB 3. This is the bill that we're talking about this hour in the exchange. It attempts to give a more detailed description of domicile for voting purposes. Let's get your questions and comments in. Again, the exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So, Casey McDermott, I'd love to hear from you, too, because you've looked a lot at this, concerns about voter fraud and how widespread it may or may not be here in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Casey.
Right. So I would just clarify that with regard to the secretary's testimony last week, I did ask for documentation of the cases that he had mentioned. He said that I believe his quote was that there has been a prosecuted case of voter fraud in every general election going back about 12 years. That's different than what I've seen thus far. I haven't received the specific cases that he's mentioned yet, but I am working on following up on that just to get some clarity on what he was referencing. But with regard to actually prosecuted cases of fraud, it is very, very minimal with in terms of the actual cases that have been prosecuted in the last few years. What we do know is that there are a lot of cases in which the Secretary of State's office or the state will follow up with people who sign affidavits at the polls who, you know, for example, might not have full documentation that New Hampshire is their domicile or might not have full documentation of their IDs or other requirements that are currently on the books right now. So what happens is that if that is the case, someone can sign a form saying that I am who I say I am, I live where I say I live, and still be able to vote that day. And then the state will follow up with those people. And if they don't receive the a letter back from the voters that they're following up with, then those cases get forwarded to the Attorney General's office. And the Attorney General's office has been very open about the fact that they have not followed up on a lot of those cases where people's affidavits or the letters have not been returned by voters who signed affidavits. So that's another element of concern among those who are raising questions about the kind of vetting system that's currently in place for our elections is the fact that there are a number of cases where those letters have not been fully returned or fully responded to, but the state has not followed up on them to determine whether or not they were in violation of some kind of law here.
Because, Casey, the AG's office has said, we can't follow up on these. We just don't have the staff
right.
to do it.
Yeah, they have only one person who I believe only part of his time is devoted to investigating voter-related issues right now.
You know, both of you, we just heard again from Secretary of State Bill Gardner there. Governor Sununu has talked a lot about this as well. You know, whether we're seeing actual, real, verifiable voter fraud in New Hampshire, or just that our system is, too loosey-goosey and invites abuse. Let's hear what Governor Sununu himself said on this. This is when he came on The Exchange about a month ago, where we asked him about voter fraud and abuse.
There's literally hundreds of ways to show that you're a resident here. There are, when they ask you for an ID, for example, I think there's something like 87 different IDs, or it might even be more, that you can show to show that you are who you are. So we have just a very flexible system here, which, has its positives, to be sure, but you have to understand that it's also ripe for fraud. Fraud's not the right word. Ripe for abuse, right? That's the different word we should use. It gets abused a little bit. There's no doubt about it.
Again, that's Governor Sununu on our show in mid-February. And so, Senator Birdsell, it sounds like your bill is trying to make the system a little less flexible, as the governor said.
Well, I think what we're trying to do is get a bit more integrity into the system. And what Casey says is correct. There are at least 6,500 letters that the AG's office has not followed up with of letters that have been returned that the Secretary of State has sent out to try and verify information. And that's of concern for many of us that are involved in election law. So one of the things that the AG's office has concerns about is that they don't have the manpower. And we're hoping to try and alleviate that in the next budget. I don't know if we're going to be able to, but we need to find a way. And this is my attempt to try and tighten up just some of the domicile language in our law so that we don't have a problem with our constituents looking at the integrity of our voting.
Senator Birdsell, speaking of manpower, the New Hampshire Municipal Association, which, has members of town officials, including those who run the elections, they've got some concerns. They feel like your bill creates what they call new burdens on local officials to make supervisors of the checklist conduct these post-election verifications of domicile. Do you include in your bill any new financial assistance for them to step up and take care of what this bill would require?
No, this is not a fiscal note bill, but I know that Senator Feltes from Concord has put in a bill to try and help alleviate that issue. So it's two separate bills that are going through the system. This bill is just dealing with domicile.
The Municipal Association, and we'll talk to them a little bit later in the hour, they also don't like the idea of deputizing police to verify domicile. This is the instance where someone fills out all the affidavit at the polls and then they don't provide the proof that the bill requires. And so your bill says police, in the course of their local rounds, could stop by and verify domicile. The Municipal Association seems uncomfortable with that. I wonder what you think.
Well, and I understand that, and I heard the testimony. I'm in the process of tweaking it a little. But again, this is leaving it up to the supervisor of the checklist. They have three choices. They can either request that the Secretary of State send a letter of verification, much like the 6,500 that we have returned. The problem with that is the Secretary of State's office has 60 days before they have to send that out. So now you're getting further and further away from the election day. The supervisor of the checklist also has the capability, if they want, to ask the local police and their local patrol. That's what's in the bill right now. If the police do not have to do that, they don't have to agree to it. Also, we leave it up to the supervisor of the checklist to be able to, if they want to go out and verify it themselves, they can do that. But it's really, we left it up to the supervisor of the checklist because they are closer to the electorate than we are.
One more question for you, Senator Birdsell. And to get into it, let's hear a little from Republican lawmaker, State Representative Daniel Itza, who said he supports the bill. Let's hear what he said, and then I've got a question.
Is there rampant voter fraud? No. Are there elections that turn on a handful of votes? Without question. And that's when the voter fraud becomes important. I'm sure that work needs to be done on this bill, but it needs to go forward in one form or another to ensure the integrity of our election process.
Again, that's Daniel Itza, Republican state representative from Rockingham County, in support of your bill, Senator Birdsell. So he said it needs work. What sorts of changes might come about as this bill goes forward? Where do you think it could be improved based on the testimony and so forth?
Well, excuse me, we're in the process of tweaking it, and we're still trying to make those decisions on what we're going to take out, what we're not. So I don't want to really go into some of the changes that we'll be making, but I'm hoping to have something ready by Friday.
Okay. Senator Birdsell, any last thoughts that you want to leave us with when it comes to the fate of your bill?
Well, I'm hoping that it will get support. I'm trying to tweak it to satisfy some of the concerns that I heard last Tuesday, and I would really love to have support in the Senate, and hopefully it goes forward to the House.
All right. Senator Birdsell, thank you for taking time out in the middle of a snowstorm. We really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Again, that's Regina Birdsell, Republican State Senator from District 19, Chair of the Senate Election Law Committee and lead sponsor of the bill that we're talking about this hour, SB3, Redefining Domicile for Voting Purposes. So Casey McDermott, stay with us. We will be back in just a moment, and we'll talk to someone from the New Hampshire Municipal Association about that group's concerns around this bill. We'll start taking your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477.
Whether you're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, defining domicile. A New Hampshire Senate bill, SB3, is getting a lot of attention as it attempts to redefine who can vote here through a more detailed description of domicile for voting purposes. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With me for the hour is our colleague Casey McDermott, NHPR reporter who's been covering all the voting bills in the legislature this year. We just heard from the lead sponsor of this SB3 domicile bill, Senator Regina Birdsell. We go now to Cordell Johnston. He's Government Affairs Counsel with the New Hampshire Municipal Association. And Cordell, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning, Laura.
So your organization has been very careful to say it doesn't have a position on SB3, this domicile bill. But in a letter to Senator Birdsell, you do list in detail many concerns that you have. So, Cordell, why not just make a statement and say, we don't like this bill?
Well, we don't like this bill.
Okay, there it is.
To be clear, we don't have a position on the policy that this bill is trying to implement. The question of what qualifies as domicile, how broad or narrow that ought to be, we think that is an issue for the legislature. That's a political issue, and it appears to be a partisan political issue, and we have no interest in getting in the middle of that.
So the problem isn't that domicile couldn't be, the definition couldn't be improved. You're okay with that thought, but this particular way of going about it, you've got some real concerns.
Right. Our issue is with the mechanics of the process that this bill puts into statute. And if you want, I can
summarize. Sure. Yeah. You list new burdens, for example, on local officials. What new burdens do you envision?
Yes, and one of them is I heard you talking with Senator Birdsell about it. The post election verification process. Where the supervisors are asked to verify the domicile of someone who has voted using a domicile affidavit, and that gives three options. One is sending the police officers to verify. The second is for two of the supervisors or other municipal officials to go and verify someone's domicile. The third is to have the Secretary of State send a verification letter. And we think just the first two are just inappropriate. It's really not the job of the police or of other local officials. And the bill doesn't indicate what standards local officials would use to verify someone's domicile when they go out there. So that's just that's something that I think a lot of people agree need to come out of the bill.
So give me a little bit more, please, Cordell, on that inappropriate. Just a little bit more about why you feel it's inappropriate for the supervisor of the checklist or the local police to go out and verify.
Well, I mean, I think you can imagine if you're a new voter in town, whether you're an 18-year-old college student or you're someone who's moved here from possibly, I don't know where, but and you go and you vote, and a few days later the police show up at your door, it's a little intimidating. So from the voter's perspective, I think that's a problem. And from the police perspective, it's really not part of their job. And if you were going to use the police to do this, you would now have to train them in what qualifies as domicile and what someone has to establish to prove their domicile.
Go ahead, Cordell.
That's one problem. I think that can be solved easily enough by just taking that out of the bill. There's one thing the biggest thing is the complexity. The form that would now be used for someone to register at the polls is about 3 pages long in the bill. And it's going to take someone a long time to read that. And if they take it seriously, they're going to spend a long time reading that, thinking about that. And, I think about my daughter turns 18 this year, and if she goes to register at the polls, she's pretty smart, but I can see her trying to figure all that out. And there are all these statements about under penalty of perjury.
So it's a little intimidating.
I think it's a little intimidating.
Some people said, Cordell, you know, this is, again, just to clarify for folks who aren't familiar with this, this is the paperwork that you would have to sign if you showed up for same-day registration at the polls and you didn't have the right documentation. They would still let you vote, but you would have to go through this three- or four-page thing, which people have said is full of legalese and is complicated and intimidating. That's what you're talking about.
Right. And you've heard, or you probably will hear other people complain about it from the voters' perspective. Our concern, and we're concerned about that, but concerned about it from the perspective of the local election officials standing there trying to get these people through the line, but at the same time make sure that they're doing everything they have to. It's going to be very complicated, and it's going to cause delays.
It'll bog things down. You know, Cordell, hold on if you could, please. I want to bring Casey McDermott back into this. And Casey, I wonder what you heard in covering these bills as you have from other local, you know, city and town officials about what this might mean for them.
Sure. So we heard from a number of them during the actual testimony last week. And the concern that Cordell mentioned with regard to the potential impact that this bill could have on lines at the polls was something that was definitely brought up in terms of if someone takes, you know, say 5 minutes even to read through this form or longer, then that when you add it up over potentially dozens, hundreds, if we're talking in the bigger towns, thousands of new voters who are registering, that can really, you know, kind of snag up the lines on election day when clerks and town officials who are checking people in at the polls are already kind of worried about their ability to keep pace with that kind of documentation. But another thing is that a lot of towns, particularly the smaller, more rural ones, are already struggling with regard to keeping up with the responsibilities that the legislature and the state has placed on them in recent years with regard to voter, voter ID verification or other election law changes. There's several towns where the clerks have now been authorized to take on additional responsibilities that usually would go to the supervisors of the checklist because those supervisors are, for some reason, either because they're not fully capable of using the technology or otherwise unable to, those clerks now have additional responsibilities because of the tasks that have been assigned to them by the state. So that's all just to say that I think that local election officials are already feeling kind of crunched with the new requirements that have been put in place over the last 2 years. So this would be just another thing that they're worried about having to keep up with.
Well, and both of you have got a couple questions here from listeners about the status of college students right now and under this bill. So David emails, he says, one has to look at the fact that the fraud cases were caught. So he says, I don't see where there has to be any real increased restrictions. He also says it seems that college students run the greatest risk of voter issues. And then here's a question from Jeannie who says, if SB 3 were passed today, will college kids still be allowed to vote in New Hampshire? I'm sorry, this is from Tyler. Tyler, thank you for the email, and you too, David. Casey, what about that? What does SB 3 say about college students using their college IDs to vote?
So Senator Birdsell was very careful during her testimony and also when I've interviewed her in the past to make clear that this bill does not outwardly change the eligibility of out-of-state college students to vote here. There have been other discussions about changing the law that currently does allow them to vote here, but that's not what this bill on its face does. What it does do is spell out various types of documents that people can show at the polls. And the concern is that because of the transient nature of just being a college student or living in maybe an apartment that has a, more kind of informal rent agreement, or you might not have all of the documentation of, you know, that someone who is a full-time year-round resident has in terms of a lease or a mortgage or something like that. So I think the concerns that we hear relative to college students is that they are less likely to have the types of documentation that this bill requires. Now, the bill, as it stands now, does say that someone can use I'm unclear on the exact terminology, but the verification of residency at an institution of higher learning. So something that would show that you are residing in a dorm, you are living in an off-campus apartment, something like that could be used. But again, the concern is that the types of documentation that this bill would require someone to provide are those that college students just generally are less likely to have.
Well, and Cordell, to you, in response to Casey's excellent reporting on air and on our website, a lot of people left comments, and more than one of them was about college students and the concern that they are voting in a community where they don't really have a clear stake. That's the sentiment, Cordell, I think that's at play here, that, you know, New Hampshire residents feel people who vote in their city or town should have a stake in their city or town. How do you respond to that feeling, that concern that, you know, people who vote here should believe in the community and want to stay in the community?
Well, again, that goes to the policy of the bill, and we don't really have a position on that. So I'm not going to weigh in on whether we think college students should be able to vote here. But I mean, again, we have concerns about the process. And one thing, if I could point out, Casey mentioned someone might not have a mortgage or a lease. There's a provision in here when someone's registering at the polls, they have to sign a form that says, I understand that if my domicile is at an abode rented, leased, or purchased by another, and my name is not listed on the rental agreement, lease, or deed, I'm required to provide a written statement from a person who is listed on such document, attesting that I reside at that address, signed by that person. So as I read that, you know, again, going back to my daughter registering at the polls next year, she would need to bring in a copy of the deed to my house. And since her name is not on the deed, she has to bring a letter from me saying that she lives there. And so now you're going to have election workers reviewing deeds and leases and saying you have to get a letter from your parent or from your husband or wife, you know, if only one spouse is on the deed.
So again, more checking, following up work for local officials, as well as you seem to be saying, Cordell, an inconvenience for perfectly legitimate voters.
Right. And, you know, if I don't like the way my daughter's going to vote, maybe I won't sign that letter.
I can't imagine you would do that. But
no,
given your interest in good local government, thank you so much for being with us, Cordell. We really appreciate it.
OK, thank you very much.
That's Cordell Johnston, again, Government Affairs Counsel with the New Hampshire Municipal Association. Casey, let's go to our listeners. Lots of people with questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. And Jim's in Danbury. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm astounded to hear what your last visitor just said. That directly impacts me. I've just moved to New Hampshire. I'm in a home that I don't own and I don't have a lease to, and suddenly my franchise to vote in New Hampshire is going to be threatened by this. I can't believe it. Earlier in the program, I was listening to the senator and saying this is just frivolous nonsense. But really, this is like some kind of, I can't believe there's a poll test that I'd have to demonstrate that I have a lease in the place I'm staying at. All my license, New Hampshire's license, has this address on it. Why do I have to go beyond that?
So
this is unbelievable.
Hang on, Jim. So you have a New Hampshire driver's license? Is that what you're saying?
I do.
Okay.
I have all my banking information is here. I don't happen to own this house, and I don't happen to have a lease to stay in this house. Why is that the business of the state of New Hampshire?
So you,
I mean, this is my residence. This is the state I've chosen to live in. I just moved here 3 months ago. This is just an astounding waste of staff time in the state Senate, and I can't believe that this senator, when you asked her to describe the impetus for this, was so impossibly vague. And here it is that if I go to vote, I'm going to have to bring a a letter from the person that owns the house that I'm staying in that says I live here?
I think only if you don't have documentation to prove that you live at that house. So you're saying you don't have...
Why wouldn't my license do that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Hang on, Jim, because we also have with us now on the line Dave Scanlon. He is New Hampshire's Deputy Secretary of State. And Dave Scanlon, welcome, and perfect timing. We've got a voter here, Jim, in Danbury, who is pretty upset that he might have to prove that he lives where he lives, even though, you know, it's not his house. So, Jim, just hang on the line and welcome Dave. Can you enlighten him?
Sure. Thank you, and good morning, Laura. I heard the voter from Danbury say that he already had a New Hampshire driver's license, and assuming that driver's license has his residence address on it, he should be all set. He would not be required to provide some type of a lease or a statement from the landlord saying that he lived at that location.
So, Jim, does your driver's license have your current Danbury address or some other address?
It does, but I was very carefully listening to what your last visitor just said, and I'm just astounded. This is, I can't believe that people are seriously talking about putting these kind of thoughts into voters' minds, especially when you look at turnout and the kind of participation we have in this democratic process. It's just, this is a franchise that a state senator, I don't even think the state legislature really has a right to impinge upon. It's really kind
of... Well, Jim, it sounds like in your particular situation, you would be okay because your driver's license has that
current address.
Well,
not based on what your previous guest said. He said, you know, if you didn't have a lease or a deed to the place, you know, a mortgage you're living in. But again, that kind of anxiety is going to depress turnout, and I think that's what's really behind this. I mean,
well, Jim,
you know, the cliche
yeah.
about this is it's a solution in search of a problem. But when I hear the people who are pushing this legislation speak, I'm like, are you kidding? You don't have a clear view of why you're putting all these hours and time of the legislature into this act. It just is frivolous.
Well, Jim, I'm glad you called, and let's address your concerns for sure. So thank you so much. And Dave Scanlon, other critics have said the same thing about this bill and others. It's a solution in search of a problem. What do you think?
Well, the issue here is establishing that a person has a domicile in New Hampshire and that they're not just passing through and they're temporarily present. And so the legislature, through this bill, is asking for the voter to show that they have taken some action that establishes the fact that they are actually domiciled here. And there is a fairly long list of items in the bill that a voter could present along with others that would help establish that fact. It's kind of a menu. So presenting your driver's license with an address on it is one way of doing it. If you don't have any other type of documentation to prove your domicile, then you could get that letter from the landlord. It could be presenting a fish and game license that is issued to a resident. It could be a mailing from federal government that might be, you know, your Social Security check for the month, or you know, some other documentation. So there's a pretty broad menu of items that a voter could take to the polling place and show to establish the domicile.
Okay, so just to super clarify for Jim and others, if you've got that driver's license that says, you know, I live at 2 Main Street, Danbury, New Hampshire, you're good. You don't need a signed letter from your landlord or your roommate or whatever who may be on the lease.
That's
just
correct.
To clarify that. All right.
Yeah.
Lots more to talk about when we come back from our break with you, Dave Scanlon, and also Casey McDermott. And we'll take a lot more of your questions and comments, too. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one? NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, redefining domicile. We're looking at a New Hampshire Senate bill, SB3, that's getting a ton of attention at the State House as it attempts to redefine who can vote here through a more detailed description of what domicile actually means. And we're finding out more this hour. Let's take your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With us for the hour is Casey McDermott, NHPR reporter who's been covering the voting bills this year in the legislature. We've also heard from a number of people with interests in this bill, both pro and con. With us on the line now is Dave Scanlon. He's New Hampshire's Deputy Secretary of State. And Casey, I want to turn to you for a moment and the sentiment from our caller, Jim in Danbury. Again, even though it turns out he does have the right documentation, he's just expressing a sense of fear, concern, that as we talk about more requirements and more documents to sign, that will discourage people from turning out in the first place. And I wonder how much you've heard that, Casey, in the testimony that you covered.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a common theme that ran through all of the testimony from those who were opposing this bill last week. You know, they might have had individual kind of concerns, as I said, about the requirements on election officials or the requirements on voters, particularly those who are more transient. But I think that the overarching theme of the testimony that we heard from this bill's critics was that of concern that this is on its face more intimidating to someone because of the level of requirement that it would seem to impose, or because of the provision mentioning that you might be checked on potentially by a police officer. Now, we heard the senator say that there might be some modification to that, but that's the concern that was expressed, I think, most universally among those who raised concerns about this bill, was the kind of fear factor that would be associated with it and the potential that that would drive away otherwise valid voters.
Well, and let's hear a little bit more of that testimony. This is Margaret Merritt. She's from the town of Sandwich, talking about the possible intimidation factor, especially for younger voters. Let's hear.
We need young people in this state. One of the problems, if you're putting these barriers to voting in the universities, we're turning those people away. New Hampshire has, you know, after Maine, we have the oldest median age in the country. We also have the lowest unemployment rate. We need young people to come to New Hampshire and stay here. By making it difficult to vote, we're saying those people are not welcome here. We are not inviting young people to stay in New Hampshire.
Again, that's Margaret Merritt testifying on SB 3 last week. And Dave Scanlon, an email also to that concern from Brian, who says, if New Hampshire Republicans are so serious about voter fraud, which is what this domicile debate is about, they would fund the AG's office and the Secretary of State to investigate these claims. Brian says it's voter suppression, pure and simple. There is statistically no appreciable voter fraud in New Hampshire. So two thoughts there, Dave Scanlon. I'm guessing you're behind one of them, which is more funds for the Secretary of State to investigate these claims.
Well, our office is charged with sending out verification mailings after each election related to the photo ID law that was passed back in 2012. That law had similar concerns, and people were very anxious over what it was going to mean, especially to young voters. But in the end, it has been very successful. Less than 0.5% of voters go to the polls to obtain a ballot without having an acceptable form of ID. The problem comes after the fact when we send out the verification mailings and then following up on those voters that that used an affidavit to either register to vote or obtain a ballot. And the AG's office has not been in a position to follow up on all of those because they claim they lack the resources to do that.
How possible is it, Dave, that there is more voter fraud out there, but we just don't know about it, given what you just said about, lack of funding at the AG's office to investigate?
Well, we know that there is voter fraud in New Hampshire. It is isolated, and usually when it occurs, it's not a malicious intent. It's just a voter that, for whatever reason, voted in the wrong location or used somebody else's identity to cast a vote. But we don't see fraud that is on a scale that's widespread and organized. But there is a belief among voters out there, that some voters, that it does exist. And what is important about elections is that people have to believe that there's integrity in the process and that their vote actually counts and the results at the end of the election are accurate. And to the extent that there's even a perception problem out there that does not occur, people lose faith in the election process. And so we have to be just as concerned about the perception as we do about the reality. And sometimes that's a tough thing to deal with. There's also a natural tension between making voting really easy and convenient for everybody to exercise their right to vote and making sure that only those people that are truly qualified to vote are the ones that are participating in an election. In other words, trying to get a handle on any type of fraud out there. So when you're trying to deal with fraud, you are restricting the process, at least a little bit. But if you're trying to make it easy for people to exercise their right to vote, the fraud issue kind of loosens up. And so there is always going to be a tug of war between those two those two concerns. And I think the legislature is going to be dealing with it on an ongoing basis, trying to find that delicate balance of where our election laws should be.
Well, your boss, Secretary of State Bill Gardner, mentioned the same issue, the perception versus reality around voter fraud. Is that why the Secretary of State's office supports this domicile bill, just to make people feel better?
Well, it's not just making you feel better. Right now, the issue of domicile is a difficult one to define, and that's part of the problem, is that the definition of domicile for voting purposes and residency for voting purposes has been severed from the other definitions and other purposes that you need to identify or define those categories for other parts of state business, whether it's obtaining a driver's license or getting a fish and game license. And it's important that there be a tie-in so that people understand, what they're dealing with. In other words, I've seen headlines in the paper saying that you don't have to be a resident here as long as you're domiciled in New Hampshire. And that is really confusing. And we should not have a situation where, there's a person that comes in to work on a campaign for 3 weeks before the election, before they leave, and they know they're leaving, they cast a ballot for their preferred candidate, and then they move on to the next state. Or somebody that's in New Hampshire on an extended vacation should not be voting here. They should be voting in the state that they came from. And, those are the issues that we're trying to deal with, making sure that the people that are voting in New Hampshire elections are qualified and should be voting here, and that they're not temporarily present and by voting here are diluting the vote of somebody else.
One last question for you, Dave, and again, I appreciate your time. A concern that came up a lot at the hearing on this bill, the affidavit paperwork that voters who don't have the proper documents would have to fill out. Again, if you've got, the college ID, the driver's license, with the right address, you're good. But if people didn't have the right paperwork under this domicile bill, there's an affidavit that they would have to fill out. We've heard it's very long. It's full of legal jargon. One lawyer said it felt like a literacy test. How do you feel about that concern?
I think it's a valid concern. The language that would be added to the registration form under this bill is lengthy, although it's trying to be very descriptive and thorough so that the voter understands what they're doing. I know that the legislators are taking a look at that language and attempting to see if there is some way to abbreviate it before they actually pass the law.
Well, we have an email from Karen who does feel like the affidavit verbiage is long, confusing, a literacy test. She also doesn't like the inclusion of the police coming to check. She says that's daunting to some signing the affidavit. She says it feels like voter suppression. Last question for you, Dave. Jeannie emailed. She says, how does this legislation affect same-day registration?
This legislation really is all about same-day registration. In other words, same-day voter registration is not going to go away. And those voters that show up before the election to register will fill out just a regular voter registration form, supply the documentation. If they don't have it, they'll be given an opportunity to get it and get it back to the clerk before the election. On the day of the election, there would be the voter registration form that we're talking about in Senate Bill 3, where there would be this long list of items that a voter could bring in that has an established domicile, but that would show an action or an intent through an action to make New Hampshire their domicile. And it would provide that list of items to the voter so that after the election is over, they could bring one of those items back to the town clerk or the supervisors of the checklist and prove their domicile. Under this bill, everybody that shows up at the polls on the day of the election that is prepared to sign the affidavit on the registration form would be able to vote and have their vote counted on the day of the election.
Okay. Jeannie, thank you for the email. And Dave Scanlon, you've been really generous with your time. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Dave Scanlon, he's New Hampshire's Deputy Secretary of State. With us now on the line is State Senator Jeff Woodburn. He's a Democrat from Whitefield. He serves on the Election Law Committee, and he's the Senate Democratic leader. And Senator Woodburn, thank you very much for being with us as well. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Well, we've heard from Senator Birdsell, the sponsor of this bill, and also just now Dave Scanlon, both saying that the definition of domicile is a little loosey-goosey. Let me just read to you, Senator Woodburn, how domicile is defined under current law. An inhabitant's domicile for voting purposes is that one place where a person, more than any other place, has established a physical presence and manifests an intent to maintain a single continuous presence for domestic, social, and civil purposes. A person has the right to change domicile at any time. However, a mere intention to change domicile in the future does not of itself terminate an established domicile before the person actually moves. Again, that's the language in the law. Kind of vague. Is there room to tighten this up, Senator Woodburn?
Sure there is. I mean, like the classic town meeting, the onus goes on the person who wants to change. This has been a definition we've used for some 200 years. Our town meetings have predated our own constitution, and we do democracy better than any place else. But let's not fool ourselves. I mean, this is all about a national trend to discourage and to depress voters by either creating long lines with these long forms or situations, which I personally have been in, where I did not have documentation on a house that I owned, been in my family for many years. I didn't have a lease. The property was held in a deed. I had to go in there, and fortunately, I was able to convince, and common knowledge in small towns, people know each other, they know the situations, as uncomfortable as they might be. Let's face it, this is all about depression. I just want to say one thing, because I didn't get a great program, but what's missing is these 7,000 returned envelopes or cards with bad addresses. Just recently, I sent two personal notes to a current and former state senator, and I miswrote the address, and they both were returned. Right street, right town, right zip code, but was returned. We don't know how many of these. We saw at the hearing how difficult it was for the chair to read and decipher the cursive of the people who signed in. Every third name was very difficult for him to read and to comprehend. So, you know, it shows that some of this might be just that process.
So when we say, you know, there's all these unreturned affidavits and so forth, you're saying, you know, it might just be because the postal people couldn't read the correct address.
Certainly a percentage of those, that process is a reasonable. The assumption because something is returned does not necessarily prove to be voter fraud. That's
okay, but you did say at the outset, Senator Woodburn, that, the definition of domicile is a little squishy. I mean, how could that be improved?
Well, I mean, I think the current laws do work. I think people don't lie. I trust people by and large. And as the deputy secretary said, when they have found these situations, they have been situations where people have made mistakes. There were errors of where they were supposed to be voting, those types of things. I mean, I've been a local official, a town moderator in my little town, And, you know, the process works very, very well. If there's reasonable efforts to try to ensure that, certain circumstances, you know, can be addressed very specifically. But if it's an effort to harass and to discourage voters, which this clearly is, and, you know, it's all based on this notion that there's mass voter fraud. And, you know, what's disturbing is that the governor and every one of the Republican senators has encouraged this lie that there's mass voter fraud. There's buses unloading people. And, you know, that discourages democracy. It breaks down the legitimacy of our election process.
Well, the governor said that there's not a lot of voter fraud, he believes, but he does believe that it's too easy to walk in on election day and sign up to vote.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, of course they want to make this process more difficult. What's worked for 200 years has been local supervisors of the checks, of which I was one, make the judgment. No one gets on that list without going through the three supervisors of the checklist in their town or city ward. That process is a process that puts people in charge, and you know, it's one that works well. But if there's a reasonable effort, sending police to people's homes looking for documentation where, you know, the devil is in the details of if a person cannot provide them the documentation because, like me, they moved to a home that you know, did not fit within the documents that they needed, would be denied the right to vote.
Well, Senator Woodburn, it sounds like we've got a lot more to follow up on with this bill, but I have to shut it down for now. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Great. Bye-bye.
That's Senator Jeff Woodburn, a Democratic state senator from Whitefield. Real quick, Casey McDermott, what's next for this bill?
Well, it will be, as you heard, amended a little bit further. We expect that, and I would expect, I think it's probably going to move forward, but in perhaps a little bit of an altered state. But I would expect it has the support that it needs to at least pass the Senate, if not the House as well.
Okay. Casey, thank you very much for helping us out. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Casey McDermott, NHPR reporter. She's been covering voting bills in the legislature this year. You can check out Casey's work on our website, nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.